This episode of the Ortho Bullets podcast will go over the topic of trigger finger from the hand section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Trigger finger, or trigger thumb when involving the thumb, is the inhibition of smooth tendon gliding due to mechanical impingement at the level of the A1 pulley that causes progressive pain, clicking, catching, and locking of the digit. The diagnosis is made by physical examination with presence of active triggering and tenderness at the A1 pulley. Treatment consists of splinting, anti-inflammatory medications, steroid injections, and surgical release. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, there is an incidence of 2-3% in the general population and 10% of the diabetic population. As far as the demographics of trigger finger, it's more common in diabetics and more common in females older than age 50. With respect to the location of trigger finger, the ring and long fingers are most commonly involved in adults. Risk factors include diabetes. As far as the pathophysiology of trigger finger, the mechanism is caused by stenosing tenosynovitis at the A1 pulley. Again, the mechanism of trigger finger is caused by stenosing tenosynovitis at the A1 pulley. The pathophysiology involves fibrocartilaginous metaplasia of the tendon and or pulley, proliferation of chondrocytes, increased type 3 collagen, and remember that chronic hyperglycemia creates collagen crosslinks, which impairs collagen degradation. As far as the pathoanatomy of trigger finger, there is an occasional pathologic nodule of the flexor digitorum profundus tendon. The flexor digitorum superficialis is often unaffected, and trigger thumb may have a fourth pulley, otherwise known as a variable annular pulley, causing stenosis in up to 75% of patients. Associated orthopedic conditions with trigger finger include rheumatoid arthritis, calcific tendonitis, septic tenosynovitis, and carpal tunnel syndrome, in which greater than 60% of patients with triggering digits have clinical or electrodiagnostic evidence of carpal tunnel syndrome. As far as medical conditions and comorbidities associated with trigger finger, the ones to know include diabetes, amyloidosis, hypothyroidism, sarcoidosis, gout, and pseudogout. With respect to diabetes, bilateral hand and multiple digit involvement is more common. Now let's go over some relevant anatomy. Specifically, we'll go over relevant muscles and ligaments. As far as the muscles to know, the flexor digitorum profundus may develop a pathologic nodule that inhibits smooth tendon gliding through the A1 pulley. The flexor digitorum superficialis is often unaffected, however, one slip may be released to allow for smooth tendon gliding. As far as ligaments, the first annular ligament, or the A1 pulley, overlies the MP joints. As far as the classification of trigger finger, the one to know is the green classification, which is divided into four grades. Grade 1 is characterized with palm pain and tenderness at the A1 pulley. Grade 2 corresponds to catching of the digit. Grade 3 corresponds to locking of the digit, and the digit is passively correctable. And grade 4 corresponds to a fixed locked digit. Moving on to the presentation of trigger finger, as far as common symptoms, this condition is usually progressive. There's pain at the level of the A1 pulley. You may notice clicking, catching, the finger becoming locked in a flex position at the proximal interphalangeal or PIP joint, and patients may have referred pain to the dorsal MCP/PIP region. Physical exam should include palpation, motion testing, and certain provocative tests. As far as palpation, you may find tenderness at the level of the A1 pulley and or a palpable nodule of the flexor tendon. With motion assessment, you may find triggering with digit flexion and extension, as well as fixed flexion of the PIP joint. On provocative testing, flexion and extension of the digit may reproduce symptoms. As far as imaging, radiographs are not required in the diagnosis or treatment of trigger finger. The tested differential for trigger finger includes the lumbrical plus finger, joint contracture, and pyogenic flexor tenosynovitis. Lumbrical plus finger is differentiated by paradoxical extension while trying to flex the digit. Joint contracture is differentiated by history of trauma and inability to passively extend the digit. Pyogenic flexor tenosynovitis is differentiated by signs of infection, including possible elevated inflammatory markers and positive Knievel signs. Treatment of trigger finger can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management involves splinting, activity modification, and NSAIDs, as well as corticosteroid injections. Splinting, activity modification, and NSAIDs is indicated as the first line of treatment, and as far as outcomes, patients will have relief in 40% to 97% of cases. As far as the indications for corticosteroid injections, this is the best initial treatment for fingers, not for the thumb. As far as outcomes, there's relief in 60 to 90% of cases. Diabetics, however, may be less likely to obtain relief of symptoms. However, recent literature suggests that success rates are not influenced by diabetic status. Poorer response is associated with longer duration of symptoms. Operative options for trigger finger include percutaneous release of the A1 pulley, open surgical debridement and release of the A1 pulley, and release of the A1 pulley as well as one slip of the FDS, usually the ulnar slip. Indications for percutaneous release of the A1 pulley is failed non-operative treatment. As far as outcomes, there's a success rate of greater than 90% with percutaneous release of the A1 pulley. Keep in mind that use of ultrasound may provide higher success rates. Remember, there is a higher recurrence in diabetic patients, and there's a potential for earlier return to work after percutaneous release of the A1 pulley compared to open release. Open surgical debridement and release of the A1 pulley is also indicated for failed non-operative treatment. Open release is the standard operative management with high success rates, and it's easier to assess the quality of release compared to the percutaneous method. As far as outcomes, satisfactory results are achieved in greater than 90% of cases, and remember there's a higher recurrence in diabetic patients. Finally, release of the A1 pulley and one slip of the FDS, usually the ulnar slip, is indicated for persistent/recurrent triggering after A1 pulley release. Rheumatoid arthritis patients may benefit from FDS slip excision without A1 pulley release. Sparing of the A1 pulley may prevent exacerbation of ulnar drift at the MCP joint. As far as pediatric trigger finger, these patients present with Natta's node, which is proximal to the A1 pulley, as well as flexion contracture and triggering. Surgical treatment should be performed at 2 to 4 years of age to prevent interphalangeal joint contracture. Remember that you may need to release the remaining FDS slip and A3 pulley. As far as outcomes, there's a success rate of greater than 90%. Now, let's talk about some of these management techniques in a bit more detail. As far as splinting, activity modification, and NSAIDs, the technique involves immobilization of either the metacarpal phalangeal or MCP joint or distal interphalangeal joint only. Remember that the proximal interphalangeal joint remains unrestricted. As far as a corticosteroid injection, the technique involves giving 1 to 3 injections in or just superficial to the flexor tendon sheath and can be combined with percutaneous A1 pulley release. Complications of corticosteroid injections include fat atrophy, tendon rupture, subcutaneous fat atrophy, and transient hyperglycemia, which primarily affects diabetic patients. As far as the technique for percutaneous release of the A1 pulley, typically you will use an 18 to 19 gauge needle. You will then bevel parallel to the tendon. Movement of the digit confirms placement into the tendon. The needle is withdrawn until out of the tendon, then advanced to cut the ligament, and release is confirmed by attempt to reproduce symptoms. Remember that this can be combined with a corticosteroid injection. Complications of a percutaneous release of an A1 pulley include transient inflammation, hematoma formation, persistent pain and tenderness, stiffness, infection, and/or damage to the neurovascular bundle. Moving on to open surgical debridement and release of the A1 pulley, the approach is through a longitudinal, transverse, or oblique incision. The technique is typically done under local anesthetic to allow intraoperative assessment of triggering to confirm an adequate release. Remember that a slip of the FDS is released if there is persistent triggering. In addition to the A1 pulley, you may also need to release the tight band of the superficial aponeurosis proximal to the A1 pulley, otherwise known as the A0 pulley, one or both limbs of the sublimus tendon, and/or additional pulleys including A3. Postoperatively, patients will perform early passive and active range of motion 4 times a day, and if the patient does not have full range of motion at the first postoperative visit, then send to physical therapy. Complications include tendon bowstringing, damage to the digital neurovascular bundle, and stiffness. Finally, as far as release of the A1 pulley and one slip of the FDS, the approach is through a longitudinal, transverse, or oblique incision. The technique will also involve local anesthetic, which allows intraoperative assessment of triggering to confirm an adequate release. A slip of the FDS is detached from the insertion and removed as far as the palm. Release of the ulnar slip may help prevent ulnar drift at the metacarpophalangeal joint. Finally, carefully debride to ensure that it will not catch on the proximal pulley. As far as complications to keep in mind, the ones to know include radial digital nerve injury, bowstringing, wound dehiscence, scar tenderness, stiffness, and tendon scoring via a percutaneous technique. Risk factors for radial digital nerve injury include trigger thumb release. As far as treatment, this may require digital nerve and artery repair. As far as bowstringing, risk factors include damage to the A2 or A4 pulley. As far as treatment, these patients may require pulley reconstruction. As far as the prognosis of trigger finger, the natural history of the disease involves progressive symptoms beginning with pain over the A1 pulley and progressing to a fixed flex digit. Prognostic variables that are favorable include non-diabetic patients. With respect to survival with treatment, relief with injections alone is achieved in up to 90% of non-diabetics, and relief with surgery is achieved in greater than 90% of all patients. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 2-year-old child presents with flexion contracture of the digit. Clinical exam shows flexion contracture of the long finger of the left hand, secondary to pediatric trigger finger. The triggering persists after A1 pulley release. At the revision surgery, the following steps are necessary. The choices are 1, horizontal incision and complete A2 pulley release. If triggering persists, perform circumferential debulking of the flexor digitorum profundus tendon. 2, extensile incision and release of the A3 pulley. And if triggering persists, release 1 slip of the flexor digitorum superficialis tendon. 3, extensile incision and release of 1 slip of the flexor digitorum superficialis tendon, and if triggering persists, perform circumferential debulking of the flexor digitorum profundus tendon. 4, horizontal incision and complete A3 pulley release, and if triggering persists, perform circumferential debulking of the flexor digitorum profundus tendon. And 5, horizontal incision and release of 1 slip of the flexor digitorum superficialis, and if triggering persists, release the A3 pulley. The correct answer to this question is 2, extensile incision and release of the A3 pulley, and if triggering persists, release 1 slip of the flexor digitorum superficialis tendon. So an extensile incision should be chosen to approach the pediatric trigger finger as the pathology could lie at many sites. The ulnar FDS slip should be resected, and if triggering persists, release of the A3 pulley may be performed or release of the remaining FDS slip. In the pediatric population, trigger thumbs are 10 times more common than trigger fingers. Trigger thumb presents with flexion contracture and is caused by constriction at the A1 pulley. Trigger fingers present with a palpable Natta's nodule proximal to the A1 pulley, flexion contracture, and triggering. Trigger fingers are caused by an abnormal relationship of the FDP and FDS tendons, a more proximal decussation of the FDS, nodules in either the FDS or FDP, a thickened A2 pulley, or a tight A3 pulley. Moving on to the next question. A 2-year-old has a flexion deformity of the interphalangeal joint of his thumb. Surgical correction of this deformity places what structure most at risk as it crosses the surgical field? And the choices are 1, princeps pollicis artery, 2, ulnar digital nerve, 3, oblique pulley, 4, ulnar digital artery, and 5, radial digital nerve. The correct answer to this question is 5, radial digital nerve. So the patient in the question stem has a trigger thumb. Surgical correction of this condition requires the release of the A1 pulley. During the dissection, the radial nerve crosses the operative field and is at risk. It must be identified and protected. Bake et al. Described the natural history of pediatric trigger thumbs. They concluded that trigger thumbs in children will resolve without treatment in greater than 60% of patients. In patients who do not have full resolution, the flexion deformity can be expected to gradually improve with time. Moving on to the next question. When surgically treating a trigger finger in a child, what structure may need to be released in addition to the A1 pulley? And the choices are 1, one or both limbs of the sublimus tendon, 2, A4 pulley, 3 lumbrical origin, 4 dorsal interosseous insertion, and 5 anomalous insertion of the MCP joint collateral ligament. The correct answer to this question is one or both limbs of the sublimus tendon. So unlike adults, release of the A1 pulley in a pediatric trigger finger alone may not resolve triggering symptoms. Trigger finger in the child may be associated with a more proximal decussation of the FDS tendon, nodules in either the FDS or FDP tendon, a thickened A2 pulley, or a tight A3 pulley. Carden et al. Looked at 16 pediatric patients with 18 trigger fingers and found that 6 fingers continued to trigger after A1 pulley release. The sublimus decussation and A3 pulley were found to be the most common cause of this persistent triggering. Bay et al. Looked at 23 pediatric trigger fingers and found that triggering was noted to occur at the level of the FDS tendon decussation in half the cases. The conclusion was made that all pediatric trigger fingers should be treated with A1 pulley release and resection of a single FDS tendon slip. Moving on to the next question. In obtaining informed consent for a percutaneous trigger finger release of the thumb, what structure is discussed as being most vulnerable to injury? And the choices are 1. Radial digital sensory nerve to the index finger, 2. Radial digital sensory nerve to the thumb, 3. Median motor branch to the thenar muscles, 4. Volar plate of the thumb metacarpal phalangeal joint, and 5. Ulnar digital sensory nerve to the thumb. The correct answer to this question is 2, radial digital sensory nerve to the thumb. So percutaneous release of the A1 pulley for trigger finger release has become increasingly popular. This procedure in the index, middle, and ring fingers can be carried out with little risk to adjacent neurovascular structures. However, percutaneous release in the thumb and little finger is controversial due to the close proximity of the digital nerves to the A1 pulley being released. It is generally recommended that percutaneous trigger release in the thumb and little finger be avoided. A cadaveric study by Bain and Associates showed that the average distance of the digital nerves in the thumb from the pulley release point was 2.9 millimeters. The radial digital nerve was within 2 millimeters of the release point in 5 of 10 hands studied. Thus, the margin of error is very small. The site of potential crossing of the digital nerves to the little finger was variable, increasing the risk of injury as well. And moving on to the final question, a 64-year-old diabetic female presents with sudden catching and locking of her ring finger when trying to extend it. Attempts at finger extension are painful, and she notes tenderness in her distal palm. Which of the following structures are implicated in the pathogenesis of this condition? And the choices are 1, extensor digitorum tendon, 2, Grayson's ligament, 3, oblique retinacular ligament, 4, A1 pulley, and 5, transverse carpal ligament. The correct answer to this question is 4, A1 pulley. So the scenario listed in the question stem points to a diagnosis of trigger finger. In this condition, the disparity in size between the flexor tendon and the surrounding retinacular pulley system, most commonly at the level of the first annular or A1 pulley, results in difficulty flexing or extending the finger and the quote-unquote triggering phenomenon. Metacarpal phalangeal locking should be included in the differential, where the collateral ligament or volar plate tethers on the prominent metacarpal head or osteophyte. The literature suggests that a series of 2 corticosteroid injections should be given before surgery is considered for A1 pulley release. Mention is also made of the possibility of diabetics being more resistant to injections, with surgical release being a cost-effective treatment for this patient population. That's all for this review about trigger finger. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.